Welcome to the NPR Station Showcase with PRX. I'm Aaron Henkin. Well, if you drive down to G's Bend, Alabama, about 30 miles southwest of Selma, you can't help but find someone named Petway. See, the G family first settled in this remote area back in the 1800s, but it wasn't long before they sold their land to a North Carolina family called the Petways to settle a debt. Now, the Petways brought hundreds of slaves with them, and as a result, most of the predominantly African-American residents that live in G's Bend today have the surname Petway. One of them is Tinny Petway, who's found herself in an unlikely art world spotlight. She's one of the famed G's Bend quilters. Ms. Petway's on the road nowadays, touring with her quilts and her stories, and she sat down recently for this conversation with WBHM reporter Tanya Ott.
I have been quilting since I was, about eight. I wasn't quilting so good at eight, but my mom had me doing it because, you know, there you had to do, a child had to do what a child had to do, and whatever the parents told them to do, that's what they did. So she started us to helping her with the blocks about 8 years old. When our stitches was too long, and she would pull them out and make us redo them again until we got them right.
So she was a little bit of a taskmaster watching you over those stitches.
No doubt about it. It had to be like she wanted them. That was straight, right?
Did you, what would you think of it when she first started making you quilt? I mean, did you enjoy it?
Well, I did, because it was something that I had made myself. So I thought even the terrible one was good to me because I did it myself. And I would hate so bad to have to pull the threads out, but at least it taught me how to do it kind of right.
You must have liked it because you kept going with it.
I loved it. I really did love it. And just to sit down and quilt, I always loved to make a quilt because it was like something I had invented. Right?
What were you using for materials?
Everything old, nothing new. Whatever we could find that was left over after it had been used over and over, the good part of it, the pockets that were worn off, we tear that off, and that was another color in most of the overall pants. And the hems of the dresses. And a lot of times, if my mom saw a piece beside the road, if it looked good, she would take it home and wash it and make quilts from it. So because no one bought material to make a quilt, absolutely nobody. It was just what you scrapped up. I even when I got into high school or middle school, and we was taking home economics, all of the strips we made that we lost during the sewing time, I would scrap it, not along with other girls, we would scrap it whatever we had dropped and take that home to mom. So, and that's the reason we had so many string quilts, because the pieces were so little, but they still used them.
So you were just grabbing whatever you could when you were at school.
We could find. Anywhere we saw a piece big enough, we didn't think about how dirty it was. It could have been really dirty, but my mom was going to take it and wash it and use it.
Uh-huh. Quilts have quite a history in the African-American community. They were even used during slavery times to tell messages about, you know, where the Underground Railroad was running and things like that. Did you hear those kinds of stories growing up?
Not very much where we were, because for us, quilts was just to keep us warm, because there was only one fireplace, one warm place in the house, and that was the living room, and it was the fireplace. So we only had that to keep the whole house warm, and I think at the time we had three bedrooms, a kitchen, and some other rooms. So once we left that living room where that fireplace was, you had to go into that cold bed and dive into that cold bed, and those quilts was there, you know, and once you dove in and got under there, you know, once you warmed up, you'd be hot enough under there, because those quilts were so heavy, and they would have enough among the bed to keep you warm.
Did you have quilting bees? I mean, was it you and sisters and cousins and aunts sitting around quilting, or how did it go down?
Well, my sister and I helped my mom made the tops of the quilt, and my mom and her sister-in-laws quilt together. And they would sit around and quilt. And my sister and I, a lot of time when they were sitting around quilting, we still in the room doing the top, some top parts. And we would sit around, we'd be in there eavesdropping them, talking about the different thing that we weren't supposed to hear.
What kind of stuff were you hearing?
Well, they had a thing that if somebody got pregnant, they would refer to it as, you know, Susie broke her leg. Well, we thought her leg was actually broke until we found out, you know, that means that lady is pregnant. So, and they talked about their husbands and stuff and unfair treatments and that kind of stuff, and we was getting little bits and parts of it.
So you were getting a real education in life, sitting around there listening to these ladies talk.
Absolutely, right. She was. But we knew better than to say anything about to anyone except for my sister and myself. We would talk about it behind mom's back because she didn't talk about such thing with us.
When the world discovered the G's Bend quilters, what was that like?
When the world discovered the G's Bend quilters, that was when these two art guys came down from Atlanta, Bill Arnett and his son Matt, and that's when the whole world got a taste of what the G's Bend quilt was like. It was a total blessing in disguise, to tell you the truth, because they took us place that we never would have gone. They came and they say they saw some quilts on a fence, and they went and they talked to this particular lady about them, and then after a while they started buying quilts from the people. And paying them prices that far exceeded any price that they was used to selling quilts with, because people had been selling quilts all the time down there, but the price ranged from like maybe I had a little store and I used to cash a lot of the little checks that the people came from elsewhere and bought a quilt, and I don't think I remember cashing not one more than $50, and they was $20, $25, and this guy came down, he was giving people hundreds of dollars for old quilts that they really didn't care nothing about, because people didn't have a great love for quilts. Quilts was just to keep people warm down there and line the dog pen and cover the trees in the wintertime and mop up the floor and that kind of stuff. So it was a useful thing. So, but when these guys came down, they started buying quilts, and then finally they somehow put them in museums and stuff, and then we started traveling all over this United States.
I wonder what your mom and your grandmother would have thought about you traveling the United States with quilts.
Well, I think my mom would have been all right, but except for she wouldn't have let me get on an airplane. and I always said that I wouldn't fly. I always said that I would never get on a plane unless it was something desperate or serious, like someone was very ill or dying and wanted to see me at the last minute. But I don't know how in the world Bill and Matt talked me into getting on that plane. I got on a plane. I went to Boston. That was my first trip.
What did you think of it? What was it like to go up there and meet art folks?
It was really enjoyable. And we were meeting all these rich people and having lunch with them. And they preparing us lunch. And we living, going to these fabulous motels and eating stuff that, you know, we would never have eaten. Especially goat cheese.
Did you like it?
I really did. I really liked that goat cheese. And I think it was six of us seated at a table together. And there was just two of us would eat that goat cheese. So we ate everybody that's goat cheese. But the funny thing about goat cheese is the goat cheese smell tastes just like it smells.
Yeah.
Just like a goat smell to me. I said, you know you're eating goat cheese when you eat goat cheese if you ever smell a goat.
That's funny. We know some of the women that had their quilts made famous out of G's Bend have accused the early collectors of taking advantage of them and have filed lawsuits and said they weren't paid enough. And what do you make of that?
Well, I've heard this. But to tell you the truth, I wouldn't say that because I don't know I don't know what these people was paid, and I don't know what came from these quilts. I don't know how much money these quilts made, so I don't know what they got. And to say they took something from them, I would not dare say that, because I really don't know. My thing is, the only thing I had about this, I didn't know enough about the quilting business. I didn't know how much the quilts made. We didn't have bylaws and rules and regulations that I was aware of. And we didn't have board members that I was aware of. So my own thing, but I didn't know enough about the business. And I still don't know enough about the business to accuse anybody. All I can say is that I don't put nobody in front of God. But other than that, Bill and Matt really open the doors to the people of G's Bend with the quilts, and I just have to give them that. But had it not been for them, we would not have been where we are. No.
G's Ben quilter Tinny Petway speaking with WBHM News Director and Reporter Tanya Ott. You can hear more from Tanya and WBHM online at the Public Radio Exchange, prx.org. That's also where you'll find a link to the Station Showcase weblog with interviews of our featured radio makers and a complete archive of our past picks. You just scroll down the PRX homepage and look for the Station Showcase logo on the right-hand side. That website again, prx.org. Log on, write your own reviews, and have a say in what ends up on the radio at the Public Radio Exchange. For the NPR Station Showcase with PRX, I'm Aaron Henkin. Thanks for listening.